This hour is brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today.
The Bernstein and Holmes Show.
He naturally keeps his eyes down the field and doesn't look at Rush.
He didn't say he doesn't look at the Rush. He said he doesn't look at Rush. So, is he allowed to listen to Rush?
Rush the band?
Don't touch it. Don't even look at it. Go on. Get out. You heard me. Don't look at me either.
He doesn't look at Rush. Because, I mean, they're not exactly handsome men.
Right.
I understand that.
Your face?
Yeah.
It's bad.
I mean, you don't want to look. There it is.
Oh, there it is.
Well, he's been coached well, right? He's been coached well to stay in the pocket, and he doesn't listen to Rush.
Great passion, right?
Listen, here's what I'll say about that. The Rush thing, I thought that was an important part of the statement that he was making, because it's like, you could stay in the pocket as long as you're not adversely affected by all the chaos that's happening around you, right?
Oh, God, there is no drummer better than Neil Peart!
Right?
Dan, remind yourself, because I know sometimes remembering joy is not maybe your strongest forte.
You remember feelings, right? Yeah, I have feelings every single day of my life. Do you? Are you saying you don't have feelings?
Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Living in the limelight, indeed. Welcome to the Bernstein and Holmes Show. I'm Dan Bernstein, and that man next to me in an absolutely kick-ass t-shirt. I want that shirt. I also want that upper body, but I will take the shirt. I'll start with a shirt, and then I'll get to work on the upper body.
Listen, sometimes I don't want this upper body, man. It's aging.
Oh, you
know,
you stop
hitting
it?
That 100,000 mile mark.
Stop
you know,
it?
You got to get some repairs done.
Please.
Need a few new parts. My
Please.
Shoulder. Listen, I'd probably take your shoulder. My shoulder's it's bad.
It's not so great either.
It's bad.
That's Marshall Harris. He's bad. Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. We have Ray Diaz, Adam Studzinski, Brandon Fryer, Connor O'Donnell, Kevin Lapka, all doing their stuff. And we have a packed Football Friday show for you that is going to include Adam Hoge coming up next segment, Ron Hughley at 11, Joe Ostrowski 11:25, Kevin Fishbane at noon, Dr. Chris Nowinski will do some more serious stuff with us at 12:25. And Studs has cobbled together yet another signature solid wall of sound to review the week and get you ready for Bears and Texans. And I think I'm ready for it too, but in the group chat, I got angry at Studs yesterday because, damn it, he's just so reasonable and patient. And stop being reasonable and patient, because as we were fretting over the injury report.
Yeah. Is fretting the right word? I think we weren't even surprised at the injury report. It was just like the reality kind of sets in.
Yeah.
Like you're hopeful as the week goes on. On a Wednesday, you're like, these guys didn't practice, but you know, there's still another day. But what's the saying? If they ain't out there on Thursday, they ain't gonna be out there on Sunday.
Seeing it is different than kind of knowing it,
right.
and thinking it. But then when they say, look, did not practice, and then we'll see. And we'll get the injury report today, and then we will compare and contrast and see where they're headed. But Studs' point was well taken. And it was, hey, guys, they're not supposed to win this game, regardless.
Yeah, but when you know so many people are down and out, like the ability to compete in the game comes into question. And if you look back at last week's offensive implosion, you start to ask, well, what is this week going to look like against a better football team on the road under the bright lights of Sunday Night Football? I think all those things kind of mount up, and you're looking up at a mountain now instead of a molehill, and you're wondering how ugly could it get. And I think if you're following this Bears team and this hope that Caleb Williams has brought and injected the life into this franchise as a future franchise quarterback, you're wondering, is this just going to be more of the same, because you have traumatic flashbacks to what it looked like when you knew you weren't going to win games?
Yeah, well, I don't mind a little bit of underdog status for this game.
Oh, yeah, it was always going to be underdog status.
I don't mind, but so maybe the injuries, by the time the ball kicks off, are they 7.5? Does it go up from where it is? Because 6.5 is a pretty big number in the NFL.
It's a huge number in the NFL.
The way things are now. And if they do, I don't want to say it's a no-lose proposition, but if you were hopeful the Bears were going to go 9-8 this year, there are still 17 games. Right? We're not up to 18
yet.
Yeah,
not yet. It's coming, though. I just want to let you know it's coming.
It's probably going to be 20 soon, but I know that it's that at this point, that if they acquit themselves, I don't want to say if they cover, because that sounds very like gambly talk, and I'm not good at it, but
most people aren't. Just so you know,
a lot of people are good at the understanding there. So I don't know enough.
Oh, I thought you meant gambling itself. You're just saying the gambling talk.
Yeah, I mean about
that's my bad.
Trafficking in the gambling jargon where people know more about those things. It's six in the hook or however it's said that. Maybe it is meaningful if the Bears are competitive and if they play better offensively than they did last week.
And that's a low bar.
Yeah. But if they play, but it's a tough environment. It's a rookie quarterback. You've got injuries up front. You've got injuries to your skill position players. And what's nice is you actually have some people taking accountability and answering questions about things. This is a different world from last year.
It's a different world from
where you come from.
The fact that you know that lyric is impressive to me.
Oh, everybody watched this show.
Okay, okay. First of all, everybody did not watch the show. I just want to point that out. But a lot of people do watch the show. I get you that. Everybody I knew watched the show. But
I know when I was in college,
okay,
and it was still the monoculture, you didn't have... You watched what was on
television,
and you had a limited number of channels,
and you took the best option that night in that time slot.
And there was a lot of eye candy on that show.
There was a lot of people who are still that. How old is that show? And a lot of eye candy is still out there from that show.
Yeah, that's 30 plus years.
Yeah, and it's holding up well,
still looking great.
Holding up very well.
Right?
I don't know what show you guys are talking about.
Exactly. I was gonna say this is what I was gonna say.
Oh well, you got to get on it, Studs.
Okay, so
Ray knows, and we're in this relatively same age group.
Okay, so how old are you, Studs?
34.
Yeah. Okay, I can see it. The show is too busy
watching The Simpsons. I guess
the show is a different world.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And
so it's literally a different world. You're not saying it's a different world.
It's both.
The show is named a different world.
A different world. And here's what you need to know. It's a spinoff of The Cosby Show.
Okay.
So it used to come on right after The Cosby Show when it first came out. And like it was a whole thing because it was very different than the shows that were on television from a casting cultural perspective.
So do I need to go back and also watch The Cosby Show? Because I didn't watch a lot of that.
No, you don't need to watch
I'll still get it? Okay.
Yeah, you'll still get it. It was a great show. A lot of social themes. A lot of like...
Yeah.
It's a hilarious show.
It was a well-written, aware show that also featured a young Marissa Tomei, a young Lisa Bonet, and a young Jasmine Guy.
Yeah.
Emphasis on the Lisa Bonet.
Yeah.
But like, everyone picked a different.
Listen, but right? Like Lisa Bonet, obviously Marissa Tomei. Like, listen,
I like all those words.
So you are familiar with those actresses?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. So,
but Studs, you said you never watched The Cosby Show.
I've never watched it.
Okay. Okay.
I didn't watch it like religiously. I just need to know if I needed to watch more of that to understand.
At that time, it was like a landslide number one show in Nielsen ratings and viewing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that's very counter to the culture because it was a show about.
Oh, and
you know,
makes sense.
Cree Summer.
Cree Summer also. Yes.
It was a show about an HBCU.
Yeah, it's a show about HBCU, which you know back then people didn't know about. Today they're just like, why do HBCUs exist? It's crazy how we've kind of gone forward and gone backwards at the same time.
Cree Summer, on the side note, became like the queen of voiceover.
Voiceovers, animated, anything. I promise you've heard Cree Summer in something.
That's the job.
The Rugrats.
If you want, Rugrats.
That's the job you want.
Studs, you're familiar with the Rugrats.
Yeah, I know the voice then.
Okay.
That's when you get to get all the acting money, but don't have to put on makeup.
Take me there. I want to go there.
You don't have to sit in a trailer. You can get your cup of Starbucks and come in with a baseball hat.
Wait, how do we get on this tangent? I don't even know how we got on this tangent.
It happens on these airwaves.
Oh, because you said you dropped the one lyric about it's a different world.
That's all right.
Okay.
But it keeps me from getting too
into the weeds.
Angsty also.
Oh,
I'm not going
to allow you to get angsty over the next 3 hours and 47 minutes.
That's nice of you.
Look, we're going to keep it positive here, but positively pragmatic. Okay, so back to the overall point, the overarching point,
mm-hmm.
The Bears aren't expected to win this game.
Right.
You root for them, you hope they win, you know they are the underdogs. If they win, it's a hallmark moment in a young season, and it's giving you even more hope. The foam is starting to build at the corner of people's mouths here in the city of Chicago. But the Bears aren't expected to win the game. Even if the Bears lose this game and Caleb Williams plays better football, you're good. And I think that's the bottom line, because unlike... just like the last two seasons, it really is about the quarterback. Like, the last two seasons, I was like, I just need to see Justin Fields develop and by the end of the season be a much better quarterback than he is at the beginning of the season. That did not happen for a variety of reasons. Obviously, it starts with the quarterback himself, but you can bring in Luke Getsy. But now you have a different offensive coordinator, Shane Waldron, waiting to see how he makes adjustments. And really, Caleb Williams, I just need to see you play with the confidence and not turn the ball over and just do better.
So here's how we got to a different world. It was because of the accountability.
Okay.
And I mentioned that where Luke Getsy would say, well, it's just execution. And and there was some all of this passive-aggressive bus tossing.
That's
of,
on me.
If, but, and even that seemed kind of snide.
I'll take the bullet. If that's what you guys want, I'll take the bullet.
Exactly. He had to kind of be bullied into taking any accountability.
And it was
for
the only time he ever did.
Right.
That's like the only time.
It's like arguing with your toxic ex, and like in those arguments, you or her would be like, that's what would end this argument.
I don't have it.
Yeah, you don't. You're a fortunate man.
At this point, I don't have
you're
that.
You're a fortunate man.
But I was going to compare it to when your parents are like, apologize to your sister.
Oh, yes.
Fine.
Another great.
Fine.
Oh, so like in my house, it wasn't just apologize. It was like, all right, apologize. Now hug his neck. Like, I had to hug my little brother's neck to, like, really physically show that we were past this moment.
And then did you, like,
yeah, I wanted to.
Give a little extra.
I wanted to, but my dad had this look that he would give you where you just didn't do anything. You just did whatever they said and just hands, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm trying not to die here today.
How much older are you?
It's a great 5.5-year difference that just annoying enough. Like, if it was 2 to 3 years, we'd probably, like, fight all the time. But 5.5 years, annoying.
Annoyed, but you have a little bit of parental investment at
absolutely.
That point.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're still a caretaker in some way.
And you still have to be like, hey, Marshall, here's the rule. If you make food, like once I was old enough to cook for myself, like I'm like 12, 13, mm-hmm. 14 years old. If you make food, make enough for your brother and your sister. I'm like, well, Dad,
I like that.
Doggone it. That's a lot more work because that's three people I got to, like me making a grilled cheese sandwich and, you know, doing some things. Now I got to make enough for everybody. When you're that young, it's annoying.
No, but you know what that is?
What is it?
That's your parents getting out of making the food.
Oh, it's a racket.
That's what it
Being
is.
Being the oldest child, if you have more than one sibling, is a racket.
Yep.
It is a racket because it's like, oh, you got your driver's license. Hey, this is the car you're going to buy with your money, but we know it's the car you don't want, but you need a car right now. You know why? Because you got to go drop these kids off and pick them up from where they need to be.
That when the first kid gets the driver's license and then the next kid is like, I have a project due tomorrow and I need glue stick and poster board and clay. Well, I'm not going to get it. You, your sister, your brother, they'll figure that out.
Why are you trying to bring this trauma back?
Don't look
in my
at me.
Life? I moved past
all right,
this.
You want to hear a little bit of accountability here? This
yes.
is new for me. So if you're a Bears fan, maybe get used to this. Offensive coordinator Shane Waldron asked about why the personnel groupings were weird last week.
Just in terms of the flow of the game, I think, you know, starting with me, stuff we can do a better job of coaching is getting us into a better rhythm. And I think we can get into some of those games where we were in a little bit of a up and down rhythm throughout the course of the game. Some of the personnel pairings that we were looking to get to didn't really play out the way we were hoping to as far as the course of the game. And there's, you know, it's going to be tough each week, obviously, to have a perfect distribution of everyone's reps right there. But something we looked at and talked about as a staff of how we can do a better job to help our guys and getting that rotation and getting the guys out there together a little bit more often.
As an extension of that, maybe not. What was your overview of Cole's usage when you zoomed out on Sunday's game?
I think I would piggyback right off of that because we know Cole's one of the top tight ends in the league. He has a great job for us. He's done nothing but the right thing ever since I've been around him. So just that's more on us as and starting with me of getting the reps, you know, a little bit balanced out. But it also goes back to playing efficient football. And when we're doing that, you know, not getting tilted out of some of the ways we wanted to go into that game.
Ah, nice.
That's all it's like for you to be happy with the answer. Like just him basically saying, hey, we have to do a better job. And you know what? Listening to his answer, it kind of, Dan, made me think this was just kind of maybe a game one thing and we're still getting used to the personnel and everything. And obviously the running game wasn't going quite how they had planned it. And just a lot of adjustments can be made from week one to week two. And I'm very interested to see how they do that on the field Sunday night.
And remember what we played yesterday of Matt Eberflus saying with offensive line play, your biggest improvement is from week one to week two. Maybe they know something we don't. This segment has been brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today. Keep it here. Adam Hogue is straight ahead on the Bernstein and Holmes Show with Marshall Harris in today on The Score.
Adam Hogue says...
Adam Hogue, Bears beat writer for CHGO Sports.
What's up, everyone? My name's Adam Hogue. This is the CHGO Bears podcast.
We just need to kick Adam Hodge off the show and let him come back on Tuesday.
Host of the Hogue and Johns podcast.
Mark Trestman's face just popped up on my computer, by the way.
Adam Hogue.
Adam Hoagie or Hogue? Excuse me, I don't know how to pronounce the last name.
With Bernstein, Holmes, and Rahimi on 670 The Score.
I forgot that Rush was actually part of this open after we were talking about somebody not looking at Rush in the open. That was Limelight, and this is Tom Sawyer. Tom Sawyer. I got it. I got there. Mess with me. Adam Hogue is on Twitter, at Adam Hogue. He is the host of all the podcasts. He's the host at CHGO Bears, the Hogue and Johns podcast, and now the 85 with rising media superstar Cole Kmet. He joins us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com, twitch.tv/Chicago670thescore, and he's brought to you by Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric for all the right reasons. Call 866-4-SEASONS and by your local Ford dealers. Shop now at buyfordnow.com. And that's all the time we have for Adam Hogue in his segment today. What's up, man? How are you? Happy football.
I'm good. Yeah, it's good to be talking with you guys again. Football season. And, you know, I'm not a big video game guy, but I used to love to play those two Rush songs on Guitar Hero. They were so fun.
And they're not that, as long as it's guitar and not like Drum Hero.
Yeah.
Because good luck if you're trying to match the drums on some of those songs. I would say that.
No, that intro just brings me back like memories of like being up at 2 a.m. at the University of Wisconsin, you know, playing that game way too late. But let's talk some football though. I'm excited about this game, Bears Texans, and this is tough. It's a tough one, but I think this is one that the Bears can actually win.
Oh, okay. See, let's start right there. I like this out of the gate. You think the Bears can win? Give me the blueprint in your mind of how that happens, knowing what we know about these two teams, specifically with the injuries that the Bears are dealing with.
Yeah, I mean, and the injuries are the big thing. Like my optimism about them winning would probably be tweaked here, and we might find out in a couple hours if both wide receivers, Keenan Allen and Roma Dunze, are out. I think it's likely they get at least one of the two of them out there. Probably more likely Keenan at this point. But I did see Roma in the locker room yesterday, and he didn't have like a major limp. It didn't seem like he was walking around in pain, but obviously trying to cut and run routes, you know, on a turf field down there in Houston is a different story. So, and I would honestly want to be cautious with that one, with him being a rookie. But look, first of all, there are so many overreactions to week one. And I think that this is one of those lines out there, and there's a few of them as I look across the NFL landscape this week. But I think this is one of those lines that is just a complete overreaction. This is a line to me that should be more like Texans favored by 3.5, and it's already up to 6.5. And I just think that is an overreaction to how bad the Bears offense looked on Sunday, which it was bad. I mean, that's what you go off the tape and that's what it was, but I just don't see any scenario in which they aren't at least a little better, that they don't, are they going to score no touchdowns on offense again? I find that hard to believe. I think there's too many things that are easy to correct. Whether, you know, you probably can't fix the interior of the offensive line. That's one thing that's going to be tough. I get it. But this week, the test on the inside is a lot easier than it was last week against the Titans. This week, the problems are more on the outside with Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter, but the Bears tackles played pretty well last week. So I feel better about that matchup this week than I did last week against what the Titans were offering inside. So that's just one example. And I think that when you look at the personnel problems, and I question the hell out of those things early on in this week, but that's something they should be able to fix. Like, you should be able, as a coaching staff, to be able to figure out who should be on the field more than other players. And I do think you're going to see that Sunday. So those are just a couple of examples why I just think 6.5 is too much. The Texans are a good football team, but are they realistic Super Bowl contenders this year? I don't view them in that light. I view them closer to where the Bears are, and these are teams that have a chance to make the playoffs and be competitive every week. But 6.5 is just too much for me.
But I can't tell if you're thinking the Bears are better than I think they are, or if you think the Texans are worse than others think they are, or I do, or both. It sounds like a little of both.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. But don't get me wrong. I think the Texans are good. This isn't like going to Arrowhead and having to play the Chiefs this week. I mean, it's just, they're not to that level yet. And I do think the Bears' offense will be better than what they showed last week. I also think the Bears' defense is good. Now, the question for me with the defense, and this probably will end up being what decides the game Sunday, is I think this is going to be a team that can continue to take the ball away, but CJ Stroud does not really turn it over. And trying to force him into the takeaways that the Bears are probably going to have to rely on, especially here early on in the season, as they try to work this offense into, you know, trying to figure out some identity and some type of rhythm. That's going to be tough this week. But if they can do it, I mean, if they win this turnover battle on Sunday night, that they should be able to win this football game.
I mean, listen, Adam, that's why I wanted you to lay out the blueprint, because my issue with them being able to win this game is what you just stated. Like, their biggest strength right now, when you look at the Bears, is you feel like they can take the ball away from other teams. That's like something they've done consistently since the back half of last season, right? But then you look at CJ Stroud, a guy who's played, 18, 19, 20 games, somewhere in that area, and he's turned the ball over in 3 games through the air. He had 2 games with 1 interception each, and then he threw 3 picks in a game against Arizona last season, and that's it. And for a rookie quarterback now going into the second year, that's insanely phenomenal. And look, maybe he's due. Maybe he is due, but he's at home under the bright lights. He knows the stakes. He doesn't strike me as the kind of guy who's going to crack under pressure, because like one of his strengths is he doesn't crack under pressure, literally.
Yeah, no, it's completely fair. It's one of the most impressive things about CJ Stroud is how little he's turned the ball over, especially through the air. Now, maybe reasons for optimism for the Bears pass rush this week. He did get hit 10 times last week, and he got sacked 4 times. So, and I don't know if this Daryl Taylor thing is for real. It certainly looked good this match last week. This matchup's going to be a lot harder going up against Laremy Tunsil. But if, you know, Ryan Poles pulled off another sneaky trade here that really pays off, that's going to be a huge storyline this season. And I that's one of the kind of maybe the smaller storylines this week that I can't wait to see. Does that translate? Was that just a flash in the pan week one? Or is this something that's going to translate and continue to be a thing here for the Bears? Because, he doesn't need, with Montez Sweat on the other side, he doesn't have to be an all-pro player. But if he can bring the heat at least a few times a game like he did last week, that's going to be huge for this Bears defense. And that's where I just think, like, if you can continue with some of the numbers I saw the Colts have against the Texans last week with the heat they brought on them, if the Bears can bring that pass rush and pressure CJ Stroud as much as the Colts did last week, I don't necessarily care how protective you are of the football. Eventually that results in takeaways. It just does.
We heard Shane Waldron take accountability, and as a texter here pointed out, not arrive at accountability, but lead with accountability when it came to some of the personnel groupings. Matt Eberflus said a lot of it is matchup-based, and the name that we were asking about is your podcast partner, Cole Kmet. Where do you think something like that is going to get fixed, and how much of a priority is it, and how much of a good problem to have? Is it when you have a lot of weapons, a lot of people who you want to use, that you want to feed, and they still need to sort it out?
Well, it is a good problem to have. I was not surprised that I expect there to be sort of a feeling out process here on how to get all these guys on the field, the right personnel packages. But I was surprised at how alarming it was right away in week one. Like, to have Rome Odunze, Keenan Allen, and DJ Moore on the field together as little as they were. Now, I do understand there was DJ Moore left for a little bit because of he got dinged up, and then Keenan Allen had to heal and he left for a little bit. So I get it to a certain standpoint. But I think the reason why this Cole Kmet thing has been such a big storyline this week is because that was just like the most obvious. Like, you're paying this dude $50 million. Like, he needs to be on the field. You need to throw him the football. I don't care if Gerald Everett's here now. And so, you know, I certainly saw, if you look at Gerald Everett, who Shane Waldron knows well, Travis Homer, who was in Seattle, at the same time.
There was a lot of Travis Homer.
I was shocked by that.
That game was too Travis Homer-y.
I think it was. So it was Travis Homer-y. And I think that, you have a first, not a first-time OC, but an OC in his first game here with the Bears. And I understand it to a certain extent that you're going to default to some of the players that you know better. You trust them. Coaching players, that's all about trust all the time, especially when it comes to who's on the field. But you also got guys who have been here that need to play. And so that's where I go back to what I was talking about earlier. Like, to me, this is the easiest thing to fix this week, especially when you hear the OC not be stubborn about it in the press conference. Admit that they're, that needs to be better. And from what I understand, this was something that was discussed this week, and as a coaching staff. And so I just think there's certain things like that that'll be obvious corrections, whether that's Homer's on the field less, maybe Roschon Johnson's active over Velus Jones, Cole Kmet's snap count. If there's one thing I can, bet all my money on, it's that's going to be over 50% this week. And if it's not, that's a huge problem. So stuff like that, I do think will be corrected.
Let's talk a little bit about the offensive line. And did you think it was interesting, as I did? Again, I sort of pulled this quote from yesterday, or 2 days ago, when Eberflus said, with the offensive line, the week one to week two improvement is usually the biggest improvement that you have. Is that him just parroting a football-y football thing that people say? Or is that true? Does he really believe it? And did that raise the expectations for the performance of the blockers Sunday night?
Yeah, I would say a little bit of all of that is there's probably, it's probably a little bit of both. I mean, week one and week two improvement is important. Regardless of the position, I think it's understandable for some guys to struggle in week one for various reasons. It's one of the reasons why that's to me the most unpredictable week of the season. So you want to see guys settle in week two. I would apply that when, especially if we're talking about O-line, to like Tevin Jenkins. Like Tevin Jenkins playing as poorly as he did at times on Sunday was one of the bigger surprises, and in my opinion, probably an outlier. I think he'll be better this week against the Texans, just because we've seen it. We know if he's healthy, he's going to play better. So that's maybe one spot where I'll buy that a little bit. I'm struggling though with the center right guard situation.
We all are.
Yeah,
I know.
I'll have to trust Flus on that one. Like Coleman Shelton is going to play better in week two because it's week one and week that one's a little bit harder for me to buy, but someone's going to have to play better in those two positions. They got to get that figured out. And I just keep looking. I keep looking at, you traded an actual draft pick for Ryan Bates. We've been talking about Ryan Bates now. Ryan Poles has been talking about Ryan Bates now for 3 years. Like, this guy needs to be one of your starting five offensive linemen then.
But maybe he would have been 3 years ago.
I think he would have been last week had he not been hurt. I think he would have started over Nate Davis, and he outsnapped Nate Davis. But I don't know if you guys noticed on the injury report, he went from limited on Wednesday to not practicing yesterday.
Yeah, the wrong direction for sure.
So I don't know. I have less optimism about those two spots than pretty much everywhere else on the offense right now, including quarterback, because I would throw Caleb in there as one of these guys too that should sort of just naturally improve from week one to week two just because Matt Eberflus is saying that.
Well, the good news is that the interior challenge is not as bad as it was week one against the Titans. As you mentioned, the pressure is coming from the outside now. The bad news is I'm not sure what's going on with the running backs as a whole of the group. I know DeAndre Swift is the guy you paid to be your guy, but after we just mentioned the Travis Homer-y of it all, and now Roschon Johnson is healthy, how does this stack up? Where do these guys fit in? And does Velus Jones have a role, or is he inactive this weekend?
Yeah, this has got to get figured out. In my understanding, I know everyone was just like, oh, Roshan was hurt last week, so that's why he was inactive. My understanding was he was healthy enough to play by Sunday. So I think that was a decision that was made, and it's certainly fair to question. I think it probably was questioned. And so, you know, I think he'll be back up on Sunday just because of some of those personnel changes that I think need to be made. But you're not going to have six guys, six running backs active on game day. So who then is inactive?
Velus.
The obvious one is Velus. But Shane Waldron hasn't used fullbacks in the past, and Kari Blasingame had that one pressure he was allowed. I don't think he was put in a great position on that play, but that's a deep shot to Keenan Allen if he makes his block. Mm. So do we start to see a shift there? Does Shane Waldron get away from the fullback a little bit? I don't know. I'm just throwing that out there right now because I'm questioning this myself, how this is all going to work with this many running backs on this roster. It's funny, when you're in that Bears locker room right now, you see a whole wall of running back lockers. That's weird. There's not supposed to be that many of them, but they're there. And so I don't know the answer to you on how this all plays out. One thing I do know, Khalil Herbert is a pretty good running back. Can they use him more? They need to use him more. I don't need to see Velus getting the ball four times. I would rather see those four carries go to Khalil Herbert, who we know can play the position and is healthy right now.
Yeah, but is it the limiting factor, as we know at this level, just like you talk about what the significance of Blasingame missing that block, that Herbert is a much less reliable pass protector and pass receiver, and maybe Waldron just looks at him differently?
Well, I think that's probably the case. Yeah, you know, that typically is how coaches view players. Can always be seen by how much they play, whether they're active, inactive, or they're just standing on the bench more than the other players. And I think that that's obviously a thing right now. But that's where I'm just interjecting my own opinion, that especially last season, Herbert was dealing with some injuries, but when he got healthy towards the end of the year, I think it was that Cardinals game I'm thinking of, maybe the Falcons game, one of those two games at Soldier Field late in the year when he got healthy again, he looked like he was cutting and had that explosiveness back again. And so I get it, but I'm not throwing Velus Jones in the pass protection Hall of Fame yet either. The guy's been playing running back for 3 weeks. So if they can get him the ball in certain situations, I feel like you should be able to get Khalil Herbert the ball in those situations.
Adam Hoge, outstanding stuff. We will let you get on with your day covering the Bears, and glad you are an ongoing part of our football coverage here on The Score. Thank you.
Absolutely, guys. Have a great weekend.
You too. That's Adam Hoge. Next up, I want to hear from Richard Hightower talking about the guy you mentioned, Marshall Velus Jones. And even with all the attrition and needs that they have for skill position help, it seems right now, is he going to be active? And how do they feel about him? His one of his positional coaches will weigh in next on The Score.
Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2. On Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Score.
And 670thescore.com. An Odyssey station.
Velus Jones. Oh, this has been a problem for him in his career. And that one was coming right to Tennessee. Let's see what the ruling is. It is Titans ball. And the problems that have haunted Velus Jones in his first two seasons in the league strike here.
Adam Amin on the call on Fox. That is elite play-by-play. That is, if you really want to know what separates somebody just calling a game from somebody who knows so much about the game that they're calling, to be able to weave in that kind of context as the play is going on, as we are seeing it, that is the highest level of television play-by-play, to understand who it was, what happened, and what it means that it happened. That is just, it's just perfect. And it separates some of the standard see it, say it from people who help you understand what you're watching better.
You gotta understand, it's storytelling at the end of the day.
Yep.
And it's storytelling in a very rapid fire, live ad lib way. And it takes years to perfect it. And he is phenomenal.
You are listening to a Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric Football Friday presented by your local Ford dealers and It's Not a Game, Illinois.com. Dan Bernstein, Marshall Harris in for Lawrence Holmes on the Bernstein and Holmes Show. And that guy, Velus Jones, we saw him featured and we saw his future featured in the Hard Knocks episode where Poles was trolling a little bit. He's like, he's alive. He's like, my guy still here. We read you the list of the Bears' top three round draft picks who didn't last 3 years because it does happen. But special teams coach Richard Hightower did not mince words when he talked about Velus Jones' mistake last week, what it means, what they'll tolerate, what they won't, and how they understand that football players are also people.
What a great thing is I'm not very good at sugarcoating, so I don't sugarcoat anything. So, you know, I just talked to the kid 5 minutes before I walked in here because we just happened to cross paths. But, you know, in regards to what happened in the game, it's unacceptable. You know, we all know that. We value the ball. And on that particular play, we didn't. And it hurt the football team. So, you know, I'm not going to sit up here and make the whole press conference about Velus because there were so many other players in that game that made significant contributions. And I think they deserve to be, you know, highlighted.
You obviously know, Richard, what's at stake with those mistakes. And I imagine that resonates with Velus when you speak to him very directly.
There's a question. What's your question? I'm sorry.
Just in terms of making it very clear to him of what you need from him for him to be able to retain a role for you.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, as a human being, I hurt for the kid. I really do. But as a coach, you know, we have to evaluate all our options. And he knows in the return game, number one thing is to take care of the football. I hope that answers your question.
That's strong stuff.
I appreciate in the world that we live in, where everybody and everything is in sports has become like the value of an asset, and people look at players not as people but as assets. You have someone very much humanizing Velus Jones Jr. in that moment, while also understanding. End of the day, it's a job. He's got to do his job. He didn't do his job last week. So I can appreciate both sides of that coin that Richard Hightower was talking about and trying to answer the question. I think he genuinely wanted to understand what the question was so he could answer it properly.
Yeah, I don't think he was being a jerk.
No. I didn't get that sense at all. And I that's what I'm saying. I appreciate that answer, but he's where we all are in that, hey, you may have seen Hard Knocks and be like, oh, Velus Jones Jr., he's cool and, I'm rooting for him. No fan is out here rooting against Velus Jones Jr., but when you see him have mistake after mistake after mistake, you go from blaming him to blaming the coaching staff, the front office, because he's still on the team. Velus Jones Jr. can't help where he was drafted. But regardless of where he was drafted, this deep into his career, he shouldn't be making those type of mistakes.
And there are bad people in sports.
Awful people in sports.
Against whom it's really fun to root.
Yes.
I mean, that's a whole part of it. Hell, I've been doing it for 30 years of picking out people that I say, oh, I really hope that person loses and is miserable. And that's fine. And there's a give and a take there. Velus Jones isn't one of those people.
Right.
So when I have said during games, and it was really funny that somebody sent back to me my sort of annual thoughts on Velus Jones, like, end this experience, let's be done with this already. That has nothing to do with who he is as a guy.
No, that has to do with he's not getting the job done.
Catch the ball. You're a receiver. You receive.
Hands like feet.
Catch the ball. Just do that, and everything will be fine. And I think Richard Hightower understands, like, yeah, look, we're all seeing it. You saw it. We saw it. You heard Adam Amin describe it. He's going to get another chance, I think. He's still on the team. So but everybody's life is easier if he just catches the ball.
I know he's a cool cat because he's still here. Cats have 9 lives. I don't know what number he's on, but he's on the back end.
Six, Five. Yeah, he's used up some.
Yeah, he's used up some lives.
Let's talk about the Bears' opponent Sunday night. Ron Hughley is an expert on Houston Texans football. He's the afternoon host at Sports Radio 610 in Houston. And a friend of the show will join us next. Bernstein and Holmes, Marshall Harris in today on The Score.